my name is Marshall Adams. I was the director of photography on El Camino and Better Call Saul seasons 3, 4, and 5. You're listening to the Go Creative Show.
Hey everyone, my name is Ben Consoli. I am a director and owner of BC Media Productions. And this is the Go Creative Show, the show dedicated to creative professionals in the video production and filmmaking industries. Today we dive deep into the cinematography of Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and El Camino with director of photography, Marshall Adams. Marshall takes us behind the scenes of the Breaking Bad universe and so much more. The Go Creative Show is supported by Rule Boston Camera, Shutterstock, Hedge, Magnanimous Rentals, and Premium Beat. So I just heard today that over 6 million people watched El Camino in its first weekend, which is remarkable. But you know what? There's been so much pent-up energy and excitement for the continuation of the Breaking Bad story, and El Camino delivered on every aspect. I mean, I thought it was awesome. And of course, it has all that sort of classic Breaking Bad cinematography that we all know and love. We had Michael Slovis, the director of photography of Breaking Bad, on this show way back. I mean, he was one of our very first episodes. So we've been a big fan here at Go Creative Show for years. And of course, Better Call Saul is awesome. I'm a huge fan of Better Call Saul. And now El Camino. You know, the Breaking Bad universe is expanding. And we love it here at the show. And I know you guys do too. Because when we posted that Marshall Adams was going to be on the show today, many of you submitted questions. Now, this is a thing that we've been doing quite a bit. If you follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Go Creative Show, you will know before anybody else who our upcoming guests are. And we offer you an opportunity to ask your questions, and we ask them on the show. So I think we have two or three of them in this episode. You get a little shout out, and you get your questions heard. So please follow us on all of those social media channels and enjoy. And also, ooh, another thing. If you are subscribed to our YouTube page, we've been posting these things called show shorts, and they're like little sections of the show. You know, if we have like a 5-minute conversation about a certain topic or whatever it may be lengthwise, we've been chopping it up and throwing it on our YouTube page as a show short. We like doing these. They're fun. So, you know, let us know what you think. They're still relatively new. I'm curious what you guys think. If there's value in it for you, we'll keep doing it. But it's a little shareable video that you can toss around that just kind of highlights specific moments of episodes that we love. I think we've got 4 or 5 up there now. So would love to know what you guys think of the show shorts. All right. Marshall Adams coming up in just a moment. But before we get there, I want to talk about Magnanimous Rentals. Magnanimous Rentals is an equipment rental home, house, right? Home. I guess it's a home too, you know? What makes a house a home? It's love. And that's what you have at Magnanimous Rentals over at magrents.com. They are an equipment, production equipment rental house in Chicago, but they ship anywhere in the country. And the thing you need to know is that, yes, they have an amazing inventory, but their prices are out of control. Their regular prices are fantastic. But then they have these things called flash discounts, which are items that are steeply discounted, sometimes up to 50% off, but only for a limited time. Now, I go to magrents.com every day because I want to know what's on flash discount. Today, I'm on their site right now, and they've got a Red Weapon 8K. They have an Odyssey 7Q Plus, some Canon, Zeiss, and Schneider lenses. I mean, it goes on and on. They're not just putting stuff on there that they, you know, have tons of inventory of and they just want to get rid of it. No, they have like the best of the best stuff on there, stuff that's going to entice you. I got a Alexa Mini on flash discount. So, I mean, there's some real good, high-quality stuff there. And you can get it, if it's on flash discount, for a crazy low price. But it's for a limited time, and you have to place your order while the flash discount is happening. So that's why I suggest you go to magrents.com every day and see what they have to offer. Orders over $500 ship for free as well. So why not go there right now? Magrents.com. Okay, let's jump in. We've got a lot to talk about with Marshall Adams, the director of photography for Better Call Saul and the brand new Breaking Bad film, El Camino. So So I'm here with Marshall Adams, the director of photography of El Camino and Better Call Saul. My God, you are deeply embedded in the Breaking Bad world, and we love you for it. Thanks for being on.
Absolutely. My pleasure. It's great to be here.
Were you a fan of Breaking Bad before you got involved in the show?
Kind of indirectly. I mean, I hadn't gotten into watching the show. I was connected to the show through Melissa Bernstein, who was one of the executive producers. Her husband is a camera assistant and worked with myself, Matt Cradle, who's the B camera operator, and a number of people that have also worked on Breaking Bad. We were all working on CSI New York at the time. And so as Melissa was kind of getting the show together, we were hearing stories from Jordan, and then she would come by and have lunch and tell us all about it. So it really wasn't on my radar until probably their third season, which is when I really kind of tuned in and checked it out and was just blown away by the show.
Yeah. Now, I know you shot just a handful of episodes, right? Or was it just one for Breaking Bad?
It was just one. Okay. I went at the end of season four, Michael Slovis had to go home a little early. His mother was ill. So I covered him for a couple of days at the end of the season. They were basically just kind of pickups and extra shots that we normally get at the end of the seasons. And so then based on the stuff that I had done for them, they asked me at the beginning of season five to come in and shoot for Michael, who was directing the first episode of the season.
Okay. Because we had Michael Slovis on the show and he was really excited about his directing of an episode. So you were the one that shot the episode that he directed.
Well, he directed a number of them, but the first one that he did, as far as I think it's the first one. Yeah, it was the first, it was the season opener of season five.
Oh, nice. Okay. So now at that time, there wasn't this Breaking Bad, you know, universe as much as it is now. You didn't have Better Call Saul. You certainly didn't have El Camino. But did it feel kind of like its own little universe, the way that, you know, the Marvel universe would be or something like that when you were in the midst of it?
Yeah, I suppose to a certain extent it did. It because it was kind of so separated from what I considered, where I lived in Los Angeles and was working most of the time in Albuquerque there, that it was kind of, you know, when you went there, you felt like you were, you know, separated and all. Everybody was very collaborative and we spent a lot of time together because there really wasn't a whole lot else to do. So it was kind of a full immersion program. You know, you really invest yourself. And in that way, it really did. But, you know, as far as the crazy success and all of the stuff that's kind of gone with it, that's kind of, like you said, it's happened since then.
One thing I find just absolutely remarkable is how the show and all of its iterations, Better Call Saul and now El Camino, they all have sustained this type of storytelling that is just so uniquely Breaking Bad. It's pretty incredible. And I can only assume that there is a really strong lookbook for it and there's some strong guidelines for the cinematography. But are there?
Only in the way that Arthur Albert is the one that started Better Call Saul. So I wasn't there, but they, you know, definitely Vince and Peter are very, very involved, and Tom too, in the look of the show and the style of the show, and especially when they were setting it up. You know, they did a lot of tests with different cameras and were trying to figure out, because, you know, Breaking Bad had all been shot on 35mm. Now their new deal with Saul was with Netflix. They were trying to figure out kind of how to bring that film quality to Saul. But they're all very involved kind of in the style and the look, but the look had really kind of been established by the time I got there. So obviously we expanded upon it and are always kind of pushing the envelope. But you know, it all started with Vince. Vince had a very specific style that he shot the pilot of Breaking Bad with, and then it continued to kind of let it evolve. You know, with Michael's help and Peter's help, and a lot of the directors that came in, and so you know, it was kind of an ongoing thing. I mean, the hard part on Saul was from what I hear from talking to everybody about it at the beginning was trying to really establish a different look for, you know, still make it a part of, like you say, of the universe, but without mimicking Breaking Bad, you know?
Well, it's weird. It's like, it looks different, but there's something so familiar about it when you watch Better Call Saul. It feels like Breaking Bad. It has a pace that is very Breaking Bad. It has that sort of suspense that Breaking Bad has. It's odd to say, but the lack of dialogue. I mean, it's kind of a crazy thing to say, but like, there's not a ton of dialogue in the show. Like, a lot of it is just moments and watching people look around the world that they're in. And it's just so unique to that show. And it's strong. And it carries through El Camino.
Yeah, I mean, all of this kind of rules that I had in my brain about television and timing, those guys just threw out completely. I mean, firstly, their approach is very feature-oriented. They do not go in for super tight close-ups. We never do dollies. We never dolly into somebody's face except for maybe, you know, I can count three or four times a season. You know, one of them specifically was, you know, Chuck on the, as he was trying to, he was in the, I'm trying to remember the name of the episode, but he was on the witness stand and testifying at the moment that Jimmy, you know, proved that he had that battery on him. So, I mean, There's very specific moments that we do stuff like that. And we never go in for super tight close-ups except for very, very rare. So their rules in a lot of ways are, you know, to make stuff like that count rather than overusing it like it unfortunately is in television. But also they just won't be rushed. You know, if somebody has something that they need to do physically, unwrapping something, changing something, unlocking a door, whatever it is, they'll spend the time to stay with it and get the reactions, which are, you know, are really the interesting bits in between, you know?
Absolutely. So now Better Call Saul's happening. You come in at what season?
I came in at the beginning of season 3.
Season 3. So now you are the director of photography up until that point, up until now, and continuing on. I mean, I'm assuming that there's more series to come. It certainly didn't end at the last episode.
No. So we've finished shooting season 5, which I literally just got home from a couple weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And which will start, I think, starts in February, which is going to be a hell of a ride.
Really? Can you tell it? Can you give us anything?
I can't. I wish I could. I can tell you. One thing I can tell you is that Vince directed episode 8, and it is an epic. It is an absolute epic.
Is there something? Well, okay. So we're talking. Let's just talk Better Call Saul since we're on it, and I love the show. So, and I'm sure our audience does too. What are you bringing to Better Call Saul when you come in at season 3? That's kind of uniquely yours. Is there something that you brought to the show? Did you talk to them at all about like maybe changing up the style? How much freedom did you have?
When I went in to interview for the show, I had just shot with a new camera that had come out from Panasonic. It had a very high ISO. It had dual ISOs. So it had the typical cameras are, 800 or 1,000.
Yeah.
It had a dual ISO at 5,000. So you could shoot it at 800 or 5,000.
Which camera was it?
It was a Panasonic Varicam.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it was new at the time, and I really pitched them on trying this camera out because it allowed us to do things visually that, that you couldn't do in other lighting situations or that took a lot more light and a lot more labor and time than stuff that you never have on an episodic television show.
Yeah.
So, of course, Vince and Peter were very excited about it.
You've referenced Peter a bunch of times. I know Vince Gilligan, the creator and writer of the show, but I don't know who Peter is. I apologize.
So, yeah. So Peter Gould is the co-creator of Better Call Saul. He and Vince created the show together. And eventually, it was meant to happen earlier, but by season 3, Vince essentially handed it off to him. And Peter really is in charge of the show now. He runs it on his own.
Wow. Okay. So you come in, you bring in a new camera. How is that received? You know, when you come in, new season, new DP, you're like, hey, I want to bring this camera. I mean, do people resist that or are they generally open to it?
Some people were very resistant to it. Vince and Peter were very open to it. It was, unfortunately, as it was pointed out to me, it was a Panasonic camera on a Sony show. So there was a bit of resistance there. Now it wasn't, I don't want to lead you to believe that we shot everything with that camera. It was kind of a specialty thing that we brought in for special low light situations.
Okay.
But it allowed it, you know, as Vince said early on, Vince actually directed the first two episodes of season three. So he was my first director, and we had quite a bit of prep time together, and he really kind of introduced me to, you know, look and style and kind of walked me through a lot of his visual ideas early on. But,
So what's your primary camera? So you said it's a Sony show. What were you using as your primary camera?
So that season we've changed every year, but that was the Red Dragon.
Okay.
So that, primary two cameras, actually. I mean, that's, you know, we shoot two cameras almost all the time, or a lot of the time, but yeah.
So you were bringing in that Panasonic just for low light stuff because of the dual ISO.
Yes, exactly. All the night exteriors, we used it for, the scene where in Chuck's house with all the candles when we host the dinner and freaks out about the phone call. Like you said, all of the really, really low light stuff. Yeah, that's what we used it for.
And Chuck's house gave you plenty of low light stuff. I mean, he had the, I don't remember the name of the ailment, but it was this like allergy to electricity. So you couldn't have any electric lights in the house. And it's very dark by nature. And then it even gets darker as the season progresses.
Yeah, it certainly does. It certainly does. Well, it got brighter first and then it got really dark. But it was actually really a scary moment. I'll never forget at the very end of season three there as I was watching the flames come up in Chuck's house and thinking to myself, you know, I just lost what I considered kind of the most, you know, stimulating and interesting set to shoot. I had so much more. I mean, you know, it's so much more in store. Those guys were always coming up with new and fun ideas.
Oh my God. Can you talk to me about your lighting philosophy for Better Call Saul? Is there something that you just kind of abide by, as your go-to when you're going from scene to scene?
Not particularly. I mean, I spend a lot of time kind of thinking about it. And going through the scripts, when I have, you know, on the weekends and stuff like that. And I oftentimes even, can spend some weekends prepping with the incoming directors, because I'm the only DP, you know, I don't have any prep time. I'm shooting all the time. So that only kind of leaves the weekends, but, there really isn't, it's always kind of trying to think of a way to bring something new and different. You know, obviously we go very contrasty. And I will say that, you know, the first lunch that I had with Vince and Peter, right when they offered me the job, they were very clear about the fact that they would rather me go too far, lighting wise, and have to reshoot something because it was too dark than to ever feel like, you know, we marginalized anything, that we compromised, that we went, you know, too bright. So wow. I really took that as a challenge. And yeah, that's something you never hear from producers ever. They're both very visually oriented. Peter had a subscription to American Cinematographer when he was 12 years old. He's really educated about, you know, what I do for a living. As a matter of fact, he's convinced that if his writing career hadn't worked out, he would have tried shooting.
Like it's, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen?
Oh no, I love it. I love it because they have such great taste in things, and they're so complimentary and supportive of everything we do. I don't want to lead you to believe that, you know, they're asking me to light things a certain way or do things a certain way. They're just very supportive and understanding about, you know, what things, the challenges that we have. And they couldn't be better producers to work for when it comes that way.
There's something about the sunlight in that part of the country. And the show reflects it. I mean, you're shooting in these areas. How are you accounting for that in your lighting to create that, you know, that, you know, Southwest kind of sun? Because it's very different there than really anywhere else in the country, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is. It has, you know, a real quality to it. And also, you know, the skies there are just phenomenal. I mean, it's, you know, the cloud formations, the sunsets. I mean, it's just incredible. You know, we carry a lot of a very sharp, kind of strong edged, you know, either Fresnels or xenons or even beam projectors that emulate that sunlight for a lot of the locations that we go to. I agree with you completely. It has a real edge to it. And, you know, there's even a certain amount of contrast that I think that, you know, I had a producer once, because one of the things that we go for on Sol a lot is to try to include those skies when they're amazing to, you know, cloud formations and things to look at. And I remember coming back and doing a show here in LA and the producer talking about the fact that he wanted all of the skies that we shot in LA to be gray. And because he believed that the skies in Los Angeles are gray for the most part, you know, that, you know, it's either a little bit of fog or some smog or whatever. And I thought to myself, wow, it's a stark contrast to, you know, the stuff that we do in New Mexico, which is you never see gray,
clear,
you know,
crystal clear. And like, yeah. And harsh edges, harsh shadows. It doesn't seem like you soften anything. That is the way it looks when you're in that area of the country. I think it's incredibly accurate.
Yeah, no, it's beautiful. It's a lot of fun, and you know, it was a real challenge to kind of get used to at first because I, you know, I was used to something different. But you know, first off, I had a lot of help from the crew there. We had some ideas and also, you know, you kind of realize what you're missing and what, you know, what's not right about it pretty quickly.
Let's jump into El Camino. Just came out this week.
Yep.
Fantastic. I just finished it this morning. I watched, most of it last night, finished it this morning. I absolutely loved it. Like, it is such a satisfying movie for, you know, Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul fans. It just is.
Yeah.
It just feels so, it's just so in the family of Breaking Bad. It has the suspense, it has the pacing, it has the super wide shots. It's just great. I absolutely loved it. I mean, you guys did a fantastic job.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such an amazing experience for me, to really, really work alongside Vince and get to know him on a totally different level. You know, we worked on that film together for 8 months, you know, mostly prep time together, you know, going and checking out the locations and picking new locations and talking about cameras. And it was a heck of an experience.
Wow. Now, how did this all happen? I mean, was it always in the plan to have a Breaking Bad movie?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, I actually wrapped season 4 on Saul and had gone on to another series, of which I was just about ready to leave from, and I got a phone call from Melissa and then from Vince, saying that the movie was in the works. It actually came together, you know, it was something that Vince had been kind of working on quietly for a few years, and there were only a select few people that knew about it. I wasn't one of them. And when he decided that, you know, it was, that the script was really kind of done, you know, he took it to Netflix and Sony, and they were all very, very excited about it. He was still kind of, you know, changing a few things and massaging the script a little bit, but they wanted to go on it right away. As Vince and Melissa were talking through it, they realized that they didn't want it to interfere with season 5 of Saul. So they were intent on trying to get it done before season 5 of Saul was meant to start. So with that was a target of March of this year. So it was September of August of last year that they decided that it was time, that if they were going to do it, they needed to do it right away. So we went, they went into production almost immediately, or into pre-production, and Vince called me, and I said I would absolutely love to do it, and the rest is history. So, no, it really, I mean, I would say it really kind of came together, you know, in August, a little over a year ago.
Let's take a quick break and talk about Hedge. Now, before Hedge, the way I did my backups, the way I backed up my media was in the Finder. I was just dragging files all over the place, willy-nilly, no real strategy to it. You know, you never totally knew if your media was backed up correctly. So you always had this little fear of like, was it backed up right? Was it not? So you end up making a ton of different backups. You get yourself nervous. It's confusing. Where are the folders? It's too much. It's chaos. Now, after Hedge, my entire life changed. The entire way that I do my backups have changed. So you go to hedge.video/GoCreativeShow and check out the app for yourself, because it is a super fast backup software for filmmakers, and it's crazy easy to use. It's so intuitive. You can import multiple sources and send it to multiple destinations at the same time. So you can put all of your camera cards and your audio cards, and maybe you have a behind-the-scenes photographer. All of that media goes right there on the import section. Then you can set however many destinations as you want. Personally, I do 2 hard drives because I always want double backups. I press transfer and I just let it go. That's it. It's super, super easy. And I have the Hedge Connect app for my phone. So when the transfer is done, I get a notification. Right now, this is the way to back up your media. It's professional. It's reliable. It's easy. It's super fast. That's what you want when you're doing backups of your media. Your media is the most important thing. That's what all the money and time and effort has gone into. So treat it well, treat it right with hedge.video/GoCreativeShow. You can get a 20% off discount on the full license if you use GoCreativeShow in the coupon code at checkout. So check it out, hedge.video. And lastly, before we get back to our interview, I want to talk about Shutterstock. Shutterstock is the place to go for all of your royalty-free videos and photos and music. It's all there. They have over 16 million royalty-free video clips. Many of them are in 4K, and they're available to you right now. You know, and each week, they add over 100,000 clips. So think about it. It is constantly, constantly updating with really good quality stuff. So when you're there searching around for all the video clips and photos and music your little hearts desire, I want you also to check out their blog. Their blog is awesome. It really is. It's an excellent resource for inspiration. In fact, I go there all the time because they always have these really interesting articles. The one up right now, can you successfully shoot a film with iPhone 11 Pro? I'm going to put a link to it in the show notes. I loved this. There's a video. There's a whole bunch of photos on there. They're really well-crafted blogs. They look great. The content's excellent. And it really is inspiring. I mean, the goal of Shutterstock is to inspire you, right? And the blog is where you go for all of that. So check it out, shutterstock.com/blog. You will love this blog. Okay, there's so much more to talk about, so let's get right back to it with our interview with Marshall Adams. There are a lot of flashbacks in El Camino, and you guys handled it in a really interesting way. I'd love to talk to you about the strategy of that, because there are points where you almost don't even know 100% you're in a flashback until you're, you know, a minute or so into it. It was a really interesting way to do it. And I'd love to get your, you know, thoughts on how that came to be.
Okay. Yeah. In reading the script, obviously there were a number of flashbacks within the script, and Vince and I actually spoke extensively about it and what our approach was going to be. Vince was very intent on not using the typical visual triggers that you would see in films and or on television for flashbacks, which is to, you know, desaturate it, make it black and white, or make it a bluer color or a warmer color or whatever.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we talked about was actually changing the aspect ratio a little bit, but and eventually went away from that. But if you notice, if you watch closely, which I'm sure everybody's doing, the flashbacks are actually all handheld. And it's an homage to the original show, which pretty much was all shot handheld. And all the present day stuff is pretty much studio, a la Better Call Saul. You know, it's locked down on cranes and dollies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So so all of that's really kind of the only difference. I definitely shot them in a kind of a more contrasty way, so that we had the ability to pop the highlights and things like that. For some of the high stress versions, things like the fire hose and stuff like that. So, talking about that scene, we actually had lost the light. The scene with the fire hose, that was all lit from condors and things, because it had gotten dark as we were shooting in the middle of the winter.
Oh, wow. So that was just condor light coming in.
That's correct. Yeah, it was a big, it literally was just a giant, strong. It was a 9K PAR backlight, and that was it. And then we bounced a little bit of it back as for some ambience. But we shot so much more of that film, which I hope you guys get to see someday. But there were two camera angles actually on that. One was on a condor directly shooting straight down on him, and the other one was the side shot that you see in the film. So there are a lot of other kind of fun angles and bits and pieces that you guys will all get to see someday.
And I think everybody is also loving the little callbacks to Breaking Bad. They're watching this closely. This is a highly anticipated film. I personally think it delivered. I know the reviews are certainly great. What was your approach to kind of putting in little Breaking Bad references, like the junkyard, things like that?
You know, that was all Vince. I mean, it's his universe. He's got a lot of people around him, Melissa and Jen Carroll, who is an associate producer, who literally, have memorized every one of those little moments. So he'd already written a lot of them in. They added a few more as we went along, to for little surprises, Easter eggs, if you will, for people.
Yeah.
But that is all Vince. I mean, it's his universe. I'm just happy to be here. I wasn't even privy to, cause I wasn't there, but it was all about servicing the original story and making sure that, the last thing that Vince wanted to have was for anybody to leave this film feeling like, it was a money grab or anything silly like that. He just felt like he had a little bit more of a story to tell. And apparently it turned out, I just heard this from him recently, that it was originally going to be just a 15-minute short that he wanted to do.
Really?
Yeah, that's what he said.
That's weird. And what would the strategy be for that?
Who knows? That was the question, and I think that was the problem. And then eventually it had kind of morphed into being an episode, a standalone episode of Saul. As he kind of went back and forth with the script, he realized that there was so much more of it that he wanted to tell, that it just wouldn't even fit in that format. But the other thing he said, that there was just no way to monetize it. Like, you obviously got to get the money from the studio to make the film the way you want to make it.
Sure.
And if they have no way to kind of recoup that money, there's no way to pitch it, So that's kind of where it ended up as a film that made the most sense.
Plus it also sets itself up for additional films. Like even the name of it, it's El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. Like, it seems like you can just keep doing these, like a Star Wars movie. You know what I mean? It's like, it just seems like you can find characters within the universe and create movies with them, or continue with Jesse's story too. Like, it just opens up a door that a 15-minute short just definitely wouldn't.
That's true. I think, for Vince, it was all about finishing feeling like he'd never finished the story about Jesse. And you know, that was the thing that was kind of nagging at him. I will be very surprised if there's ever another Breaking Bad movie. I think he's told the story and he's happy with the story that he told.
Oh, well, I mean, there's certainly an audience for it, but at the same time, there's something just so satisfying about kind of quitting when you're ahead in a way. I mean, you guys still have Better Call Saul, obviously, and that's going great. But there's something, I don't know, there's something nice about just kind of ending it. But my God, studios get hungry. They get greedy.
No, I agree. But I mean, that's all Vince. I mean, he won't, unless he feels like he really has a story to tell. There's no way that he would create, a universe like, with toys and things. That's just not him. It's got to be driven by the story. It's got to be, pushed by, it's an interesting thing that Peter says all the time. They talk about going into the writer's room and following the story. And he literally means that as they're writing, that they really kind of know instinctually when the story is going in the right direction and that they really don't control it in any way. It just kind of finds you, which was the thing that kind of broke his heart about Chuck was that, it took them a long time to kind of come to the realization at the end of Chuck's, life, the end of season three there, that was the way it had to go. And there was no other way around it because Michael McKean is just an amazing guy to work with and so talented. And to lose him was a very, very scary thing for them. But they, they said, to be true to ourselves, that's really where it's going. And we have to be honest with it. And so that, that's always been kind of the drive for all of them. I mean, starting with Vince and kind of establishing the way things are run on both shows, or were run on Breaking Bad and are run on Better Call Saul. But it has to be driven by the story.
I want to talk about some iconic shots in El Camino. Let's start with the time lapses. I mean, that is a throwback right from Breaking Bad. They're known for their time lapses, kind of almost began that whole genre that you saw on Vimeo around that time. Were you involved in any of these time lapses, or is that a second unit?
No, I was definitely involved in them. Vince and I kind of chose them together along with my loader, Jesse Heidenfeld, amazingly enough, who's just an incredibly talented guy in his own right. He helped me put together a time lapse rig that we'd carried on Saul and never used. But he was the obvious guy rather than, bringing somebody in specifically for this to go and shoot them. And that's what he did. So it was Jesse and a couple, security and a couple of PAs to kind of help keep him safe. But that was all him. Jesse shot them all himself.
What was the camera package?
It was an A7 R2, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow.
And I'm trying to remember the time lapse rig. There was only actually one of the we did the tip up from the train into the city, and that elevated kind of freeway platform thing that actually leads into a parking structure. But was the only one that actually used the head. And I'm trying to remember who makes that anyway. But it was he would go out once every so often. We would talk about if the timing was going to be right or the weather was going to be right. He ended up reshooting a couple of them because Vince wanted a little bit more weather or a little bit less weather. But that was all in house.
I would love one video of all the time lapses, used and not used. I'd love to see like all of the cool time lapses from the history of Breaking Bad and Saul and now this. I think that would be a great clip. People would love that.
Yeah, no, you might be right. Yeah, I think it could be very cool. I mean, there were some amazing ones on Breaking Bad, and in all fairness, that was a separate crew that came from LA that did those and just did an incredible job with them. Ours were very specific because we were shooting widescreen, not to go off track here a little bit, but, early on, Vince and I started talking about the fact that that he really wanted to shoot widescreen, for El Camino. And so that lends some challenges when it comes to things like using, an over the counter camera, like the, the Sony A7R2. It definitely, you know, when you're shooting widescreen, you have to figure out what your plan of attack is, because it's, you know, such a kind of an interesting format.
I want to talk about Todd's apartment in El Camino. You have this absolutely stunning overhead shot where Jesse is searching through the apartment. It's kind of a time-lapse sort of look. Talk to us about that and how that was put together.
Well, that was actually, interestingly enough, before my time. So Judy Ree, who is the production designer on the show, and in some of her early conversations with Vince after reading the script and you know, kind of pitching some ideas, one of her first ideas was for that set to, one, have a kind of a rat in a maze feel if we could do this overhead shot. And so it was kind of a pitch that she had for Vince even before I started my prep. And that meant actually building the entire set in the widescreen format and 2:3:9:1 format so that it would fit the frame, which is something that Vince loved the idea of, and we did. It took almost 24 hours of a very large crew to take all of the ceilings and all of the ropes and everything out that was in the way the day before to shoot that shot. But they magically got it done. And you know, it was I can show you some stills I have. I mean, I have from early on.
Can we share them with the audience?
You know what? I honestly, that's a great question. You know, let me check on that. Let me check on that.
Yeah, but, I mean, share them with us. If we can, we'll put them out in the show notes. If not, it's fine. But I'm amazed that was shot practically. I thought for sure that you did like each individual, like each set, and then just kind of put it together in visual effects. I can't believe this was the full set with no ceilings and a camera above it.
That was it. It was, the camera was 55 feet in the air, which is the perm height at the Albuquerque studios there, you know, the highest beam height. And so we actually found the exact center of the set, had been working on this shot for months and months. I mean, like I said, I'll share these pictures, these photographs I have, but I literally was up there shooting a taped out version of the set months and months and months before we actually did this shot.
Wow.
But, yeah, and so we coordinated, you know, getting the camera up there in the exact right position. It was dead center, and poor Aaron ran around that apartment for hours and hours and hours as we shot that shot. It was really cool. It was a lot of fun to do practically. You know, it's when you start piecing things like that together, it's a little bit more difficult. You know, I mean, but in all fairness, the compound, you know, the white supremacy, neo-Nazi, whatever you would want to call it, compound has, since they shot the finale of Breaking Bad, has been torn down. It doesn't exist. Not one single scrap of it. So that was all built in CGI outside of the Quonset hut where the dog run was and the shot where they're going through the gate. That was all built by a visual effects company.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and they did just an amazing job.
I love when you have no idea it's a visual effect. Like, that's my favorite type of effect. When it goes by and it's just not even in your mind. I love that.
Yeah, I know. And I knew how good those guys were early on when I, you know, one of my first trips back to LA to work with Dave Cole, the colorist on the movie. And he said, "Wow, where is that location?" And I said, "You're not going to believe that, but that's an effect shot. It was one of the few plates that actually had been put in already." And he was blown away. He couldn't believe it. And he sees a lot of effect shots, and for it to go past him was a really satisfying moment.
We've got an audience question from Matt Carlson on Twitter. He's saying that his favorite scene was when Todd was singing "Sharing the Night Together," and asking, was that filmed with a car mount or unattached? So talk to us about that. Lots of car stuff in this too. I mean, it's called El Camino, but like a lot of different ways of, I'm stomping all over his question. Let's get through that first. He wants to know, was it filmed with a car mount or unattached?
Yeah. So we did all of that that entire sequence, which is the burying of the maid in the Painted Desert in Arizona, which is about a 4 or 5 hour drive actually outside of Albuquerque.
Wow.
So it took us a couple days to shoot both sequences before the digging and after. And then also that included the driving stuff, which a lot of it was done actually from a helicopter and stuff. But the particular shot that he's talking about was shot actually from an insert car, from a tow rig. We had, a remote head mounted on it and my camera operator, we were talking to, because it's, the shot in a lot of ways is a reveal that Jesse isn't in the front seat like you think he might be.
Yeah.
But Paul took his own timing, listening to Jesse Plemons sing. We were all just laughing uncontrollably on the insert car. Thank God Jesse couldn't see us, but it worked out absolutely perfectly. It was such a great shot. On the timing with the truck and all that stuff, that Vince had set up was just amazing. I think I've got pictures of that too. Somewhere in my stuff. So as soon as I find out, I'm going to try to share those with you.
Well, there's so many different facets to this. I mean, it's a Breaking Bad film. It's a car flick. Like, there's so many different unique car shots. You're overhead. You've got cars driving all over the place. You're in them. You're outside of them. You're attached. You're not attached. How are you kind of making the car the focal point and the star, this El Camino, earlier in the film? What are some of the ways that you do that as a cinematographer?
Well, it was about the connection to the car. None of us knew that it was going to be called El Camino, by the way.
Okay.
Our code name for the film was Greenbrier. So everything I own that I have, including the slate, which I have right here, says Greenbrier on it.
Oh, wow.
But we obviously knew, how iconic the car was. I mean, hadn't had a lot of screen time in Breaking Bad, but it certainly was something that, everybody remembered. It was kind of to continue that story and to really kind of feel like you're, along for the ride in a lot of ways,
But do you do anything different from a lighting or cinematography standpoint to make it stand out?
It's not really. I mean, it's all specifically, it depends on the specific shot. I mean, one of the things that Vince did do was I don't know if anybody can remember, but the old American cars in the beds of those trucks, they had little slats in them, little recessed points in them, mm-hmm. so that things didn't roll around in there, I guess. He filled those slats with those orange stripes so that we could make sure that we could see Jesse clearly in the back of that car as we were, driving through the Painted Desert, and he was rolling around in the back with the body, which was a much longer scene originally. But that was one of the things, because the bed was all black and he was very concerned about not being able to see him back there because, the windows were tinted and it had the shell over it and all that stuff. So that was a consideration, but that was more from a production design standpoint than it was from me. My single drive, having had it beaten into me so much is really story and what, how can I best service the story visually? But to be fair with Vince, he really, not lighting wise, but visually, he really has a strong sense of where he wants the camera to be and what he wants it to do from shot to shot. I can show you, actually, I have literally every shot of every scene I've ever done with Vince, which is now 1, 2, 3, 4 episodes of television and the movie, all hand drawn out, on pieces of paper,
wow.
with the size and even sometimes the lens that he has in mind, et cetera, et cetera. So I would say 95% of those shots have been pre-thought and pre-talked about and thinking about things like reflections and stuff like that.
are listening to the PremiumBeat.com Song of the Week. It's called Pushing On by Evan McDonald. Premium Beat is where to go for all of your royalty-free music and sound effects. They have a huge selection of royalty-free tracks for as low as $49 each. $49! And you don't just get the individual track. You get cutdowns, you get loop sets, you get stems. So you can customize the track to fit your project perfectly. Of course, they got a fantastic blog there called The Beat, and it's an excellent resource for filmmakers all around. So check it out for yourself at premiumbeat.com. Now, there is so much more interview ahead of us, but I just want to take a moment and talk about Rule Boston Camera. Rule is the place to go to purchase and rent all of your production equipment. Now, the thing that makes Rule so great is that they have a gigantic inventory. I mean, everything you can imagine. When all the Hollywood films come through the Boston, New England area, they're using Rule. They are. Now, if this rental house, Rule Boston Camera, has the equipment needed for a major Hollywood film, of course it's going to be able to handle the stuff that we're pushing towards it, no matter what you're doing. If you're doing like commercials like me, or you're doing big, huge feature films, they've got you covered. So you've got the inventory down, right? But where they really shine is their service, because they are a production partner. Okay, you're going to go and you're going to get expert advice and counsel in pre-production, technical guidance when you take the equipment out for your shoot, and they are committed to supporting you while you're on location. Now, we're talking about peace of mind here. We're talking about a production partner. And that's what Rule is all about. They are steeply and deeply rooted in the production community here in Boston and New England and the country. And you should be checking them out for yourself over at rule.com, R-U-L-E.com. All right, let's get to the conclusion of our interview with Marshall Adams, talking about all things Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, and El Camino. Let's talk about Candy Welding and this gunfight. You're now entering into this little world of, there's like a little mini Western movie going on. Talk to me about that. I mean, it is so clear you're trying to pay homage to Westerns. I mean, it can't be any more clear. You've got the close-up of the eyes. You get the hands right by the gun and all that. Where did that come from, and then how did you achieve that?
It was an idea that Vince had early on that, there were actually two places. The other one is a little bit more subtle, not to get off topic, which is again in the Painted Desert when Todd's coming and reaching for the gun and they have that kind of face off.
Yes.
He's leaning back and forth to flare the lens just at the right times in the dialogue. If you see on his side, you know, it's protruding past his hip. But anyway, getting back to Candy Welding. So that was the Candy Welding was kind of near the end of the production and you know, we had talked about this thing, this approach to this scene for a long, long time, and some of the ideas that Vince had visually, you know, and Paul and Matt and I added a few more, but you know, it was definitely a very kind of Fellini face off, you know, the widescreen being able to hold the gun and you know, the person in the background with the rack focus and one thing that I will say that I do a lot of and people will notice is I use eye lights. So I almost always will try to put a little ping in somebody's, a reflection in somebody's eye.
Yeah.
What it affords me is the ability to go what I feel like much darker in the scene if I really want to, because as long as you can see a little bit of light in somebody's eyes, you really have a sense of where they're going and what they're doing emotionally. Mm. So that was an important thing for me that, you know, kind of leads through the whole film, but was really going on in there. If you really, you know, if you look at those close-ups in their eyes, you can see both of the fluorescent fixtures and one tiny little ping in their eyes, which absolutely has no motivation, but it's there anyway.
And Jesse gives you so much in his face. I mean, it's unbelievable. The acting's great no matter what. I mean, but he just gives you so, there's so much expression in his face and his eyes. I mean, it's got to be a joy to be working with him. I can't remember. I can't like place his real name. Oh, Aaron Paul. There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, I had done that one episode of Breaking Bad, but I hadn't really gotten to know Aaron. You know, it was a crew of people that had been together for 5 years and, you know, they all knew each other. I was a bit of a guest. I mean, they were very, very nice, but you know, I didn't have a lot of time to kind of get to know Aaron. Not, and sure. he wasn't really big in that particular episode anyway. But because it was all for me, it was all well. I guess the magnets pitch part was, but I got to know Aaron really, really well on this film, and he just is absolutely the sweetest guy ever. But one of the early scenes that I remember doing with him was when he comes to the door at Skinny Pete's house. And I remember, you know, the shot, the close up on him, the, you know, the people actually post even still, he does a change from being incredibly guarded and not approachable to somebody who is really, terrified and scared and in need of help without barely changing a muscle on his face. And I knew that at that moment, I mean, that was like day three, I think, on the show. And I thought, man, oh man. I mean, I've always known this guy was good, but holy smokes, that just blew my mind. And that's, you know, that's how good of an actor he really is. I mean, he can do that stuff so small and so subtly. And you know, luckily, you know, everybody, especially in the Breaking Bad universe, really kind of knows that stuff happens. So they have to watch closely for it, you know?
We've got another audience question. Robert Baird on Twitter wants to know. He says, I'd love to know how you managed to keep the tone of the series, yet made El Camino seem more like a film, as it seems to have been more cinematic feel. Okay, so I think he's basically saying that El Camino has more of a cinematic film look. How are you inserting that into the universe we've been talking about, keeping the tone of the series, but making it more cinematic for the film?
Well, tone-wise, I mean, I gotta shout out to Judy Reed. I mean, that was all of her research, and
she's the production designer.
She's the production designer. Okay. Sorry, yeah. You know, so all of the paints and colors and tones and things like that were all decided by her, and so that was really, really a lot of work that she went through and, you know, matched a lot of stuff. And, you know, she gave backstories to all of those things. I mean, I don't know if people noticed, but at Skinny Pete's house, you know, there's this sense that he grew up in that house, that his mom lived there, and, you know, a lot of her stuff is still around. We, you know, nobody knows whether she's passed away or whether she's just gotten sick of living with him and moved out, but
yeah, I love the new, you know, the new TV on top of the old TV. Like, I love that. I've seen that, I've seen that.
Yeah, that was all Judy. It was like, you know, this is quality. She really, you know, all of his kind of Star Trek stuff kind of scattered around, but looking like it's kind of shoehorned in between, you know, the knickknacks that she obviously once owned. And there's actually a great piece that Vince unfortunately had to cut out for time, where they're backing the El Camino in the driveway. About 10 seconds after where he cuts out of it, we roll through a little miniature pond and some garden gnomes and stuff that was obviously mom's that was in the driveway there. But again, those are all things that'll be in the DVD extras you guys will get to enjoy someday. But so she, you know, she really kind of gives these, really thinks them through and gives them, you know, backstories and thinks about where they would come from, but also, you know, wants to make sure that the colors are true to the show and to the universe. So, and I was very cognizant of making sure that we, you know, paid homage to Michael Slovis and all of the achievements that you know, he made and all of the amazing things that he brought on the original series. We really wanted to make sure that we tipped our hat to him. In a lot of ways, you know, I emulated some of the lighting styles, especially in the flashbacks that I thought Michael probably would have brought. But also, you know, we did things like we didn't shoot film. We ended up choosing the Arri 65 millimeter camera. So It's an Alexa 60. We're in the whole movie shot on Alexa 65, which actually, you know, used to be a giant, you know, for the large format for things like IMAX and 65 mil films. We ended up choosing that camera. We shot widescreen, which obviously, you know, you didn't do in television back then, mostly for the most part, don't you still to this day, you know, it's such a widescreen format, but you know, New Mexico really lent itself to it in a lot of ways, like the old Westerns, you know, it's a very horizontal world in Albuquerque. And, it really shows off the aspect ratio really shows off the world around you in a great way. So, but also, you know, being able to use it for things like that, you know, the Westerns face off and stuff like that. But, so in a lot of ways it was very different because it, you know, it didn't follow, the original pattern of the show being shot on 35 and obviously being in 16:9. But, you know, we were very cognizant of the fact that we wanted to pay homage to the original production designer, Michael Slovis, the original, director of photography, and all of the great work that they'd done.
We just have a couple minutes left and I want to end talking about the post and the color. Were you involved in any of the post-production for this film, including color grading? Were you involved?
So I was not involved in any of the editing. You know, that was all Vince. So early on, Vince asked me if I would be willing to come and do a color grade on the film. Of course, you know, I wanted to. We were obviously in the middle of shooting, you know, the fifth season of Better Call Saul. So I went to Peter and Vince and Diane and myself went to Peter and asked him about potentially giving me an episode off, which is essentially what happened. So I did not shoot episode 4 of season 5. My camera operator, Paul DiNacci, who's actually been there longer than I have, he was the A camera operator on season 2 on Saul, and he's been there ever since, and just an incredible artist in his own right. And he's also shot a number of second unit sequences for me, the bus sequence to Louisiana. You know, he shot that all, and a number of other the great scenes that he's done for us over time. So he shot episode 4 of season 5 of Better Call Saul. I'll look forward to early next year. I can't wait to see it. Actually, we're going to start color timing that soon. But anyway, so I came home to Los Angeles for 2.5 weeks. I came out one weekend, one long. We had a holiday weekend, so I came out for 3 days to get it started. Sat with Vince and Dave Cole, the colorist, and we started working on the standard version, the theatrical version that didn't have any HDR. You know, there were a number of versions that we had to do. One was the standard dynamic range for the theatrical version. We did 1,000 nit, which is, you know, an HDR kind of today, this day and age, Netflix version. We did 4,000 nit version, which is a much, much brighter version that could play in the future. And then, you know, a few more in between. I went back to Albuquerque for a week to finish out episode 3, and then came back at the beginning when they started episode 4 and stayed here for 2.5 weeks with Vince and Dave and Diane and Jen and we worked on it day and night.
That's interesting. So you have to make a future-proofed color version at 4,000 nits. I'm well aware that people are doing, you know, one for, you know, TV, I guess, the HDR version, a theatrical version, if you're doing that. But I haven't heard anybody talk about the future-proof version. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, I know. It was the first time I'd ever heard of it. You know, we still haven't gotten around to doing the HDR versions for Better Call Saul yet. But, you know, there's been talk about it for a long time. But it was interesting, and the approach in a lot of ways was different. I mean, for the most part, we kind of kept things, you know, because Vince has always kind of been of the mind that, you know, the HDR is a tool to be used, but not to be abused, and so, you know, only to use it in special situations. And in the film, if you watch closely in the SDR version, when Todd pulls the tarp off and Jesse's down in the pit.
Yeah.
We actually do a little iris. We let it go bright in the SDR version, and then we do an iris back down slowly. In the HDR versions, both the 1000 nit and the 4000 nit, we make your eye do that. So we take it all the way till, as Vince says, take it till it breaks. We took the 1000 to 1000 nits, and we took the 4000 to 4000 nits.
Wow.
It's the only time in the film that you'll ever see it, but it literally manually, it makes your eye iris down because it's so bright.
Wow.
So that was a fun kind of different approach for the two different versions. There wasn't a whole lot else that we really, other than, embracing the blacks and some of the highlights and being able to see places that, you couldn't normally see in the standard version and in the SDR version. But
did you make a custom LUT for on set and dailies and stuff?
We did. We after shooting the test that we did, we spent 3 days shooting tests. We did a double blind test for Vince, like he had done on at the beginning that Arthur Albert and Vince and Peter put together at the beginning of Better Call Saul, trying to figure out what camera and what approach they wanted to take visually. So we did the same for El Camino. We shot Sony's new camera, the Panavision DXA at the Venice. So we shot the Venice in widescreen spherical. We shot the DXL2 in both anamorphic and spherical. We shot 35 millimeter film in both anamorphic and spherical. And we shot the Arri 65, the Alexa 65, in spherical only. So, and then Diane, who is our executive producer, also in charge of all things post-production, juggled them all up so that you couldn't tell what was what. They all had different letters and numbers.
Wow.
And basically, Vince then came in and watched everything, as we all did, and decided what he thought was his favorite camera, just without any kind of cues as to what it was or what size it was or any of it.
Was that your favorite too?
It was. It absolutely was by a large margin. The ability to because of the 65 mil, it's a little bit hard. It's a lot harder on the assistants because they have quite a bit less depth of field. But it allows us to control the depth of field, which is such an important thing when you're doing things like those Fellini-esque racks from the gun to people's faces and stuff like that. So to have that control really was a nice extra aspect. But also the camera itself was just absolutely blew us away. The images that come out of that camera are just phenomenal, and especially in low light, it just really shines. So it was an obvious choice for me, and I was really happy to that it was the obvious choice for Vince too.
Well, the movie is so great. It's so much fun. I think even if you aren't a Breaking Bad fan, you don't really need to know much about Breaking Bad to watch El Camino. I don't have the greatest memory in the world, and I didn't even like. I usually like to watch a recap, of whatever series. Even if I go from season to season, I like to watch a recap just so that I get up to speed for the new season. You really don't need to remember everything from Breaking Bad to watch El Camino. I do think it's nice if you do, because you pick up on all the little nuances. Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad, I mean, El Camino now, you are part of such a great family of work. Like, this is awesome. What a great gig.
Tell you how lucky I feel to be here to have found these guys. I'm sorry.
Well, your voice is dying out, and we're at the end of our hour. So, so perfect timing.
I can't tell you how lucky I feel to have found those guys. They are such a joy to work with, and makes me smile every day. I look forward to going to work every day, and we're always doing something fun and different. Just a quick shout out to Peter and his commitment. Obviously, this is all through Vince, but the opening, the teaser that we did last season of Saul in his office, which was a flash forward, Peter really wanted to shoot that on film because the show had been shot on film. It cost a small fortune to bring that film cameras in and do it, but he was so committed to it being in the Breaking Bad time zone that he absolutely insisted upon it. And that's the kind of stuff that we get to do every day that just makes me smile.
I love that. Well, you guys can check out El Camino on Netflix. It's there right now, and you know you have a subscription to it. Don't even pretend that you don't. So get out there, watch the film. You know you guys are going to love it. Also, Better Call Saul is there, and Breaking Bad is there. So everything you need to see is right there on Netflix. And we're so glad to have you here, Marshall, to talk all about it.
Oh, thanks so much, Ben. I really appreciate you having me. It's been a lot of fun, man.
There he goes. I want to thank Marshall Adams for coming on the show and talking about his experience in the gigantic Breaking Bad universe. I love that. I also want to thank Matt Russell for mixing and mastering and making the show sound so good. You can find him over at gainstructure.com and on Twitter at gainstructure. And of course, our producer, Connor Crosby, you can find him at ignitionvisuals.com. So don't forget, follow us on social media, subscribe to us on your favorite podcast apps, and support our sponsors, Premium Beat, Shutterstock, Hedge, Rule Boston Camera, and Magnanimous Rentals. Because without these people, the show wouldn't exist. So please support those that support us. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.